Shine Women. This is our monthly podcast, and I'm so glad that you're here. I'm Sandra Pollock, founder, co-founder, actually, with my partner in crime, you'll meet here in a moment, of Shine Together and the Women's Awards. And just to remind you a little bit about what I do, my husband would say something like chief cook and bottle washer, but... But in addition to that, I run a consultancy called Open Mind Training and Development, doing exactly what that says. The focus is on leadership, management, and organizational change, diversity, and inclusion. I mentioned my partner in crime, Leanne Bonner-Cook. Introduce yourself.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. So I'm Leanne Bonner-Cook and I am running LBC Mentoring. And LBC stands for Leading Businesses Consciously. I don't think we do enough of it. I think there's a lot of people out there that are running businesses that don't do it consciously. And I'm there to help them become conscious about what they do. And that brings me on really nicely to our guest today when we're talking about conscious directorship in organizations. And I'd like to welcome Tony Robinson, who is the director and founder of Nucleus HR. Welcome, Tony.
Welcome, Tony.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm pleasure to be here. Thanks. It's interesting that your partner, your husband, classes you as chief cook and bottle washer. I don't think my partner would even dare say that. She can't cook and she rarely loads the dishwasher, quite frankly. They're two things you wouldn't let me be doing.
That's where the 15-year-old son and child labour come in, isn't it?
Oh, right. That's probably where I'm going wrong. You see, I have a 27-year-old living in my house. But anyhow, there you go.
So, Tony, tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey. What led you to Nucleus HR?
Well, my journey was a bit of an odd one, really. I started out as a professional athlete many, many years ago. Seems like a totally different life now. Coming up to the Olympic Games, it sort of focuses your mind a little bit more. But I started it as an Olympic athlete. And when that career ended through two injuries in quick succession, I needed to get a job. My dad said I needed to get a job. And in my head, I was going to be Olympic and world champion. So, you know, I didn't realize I'd need to ever get a job. That wasn't really where my head was going. I was going to do something else with my sports background. But I went for five interviews in one day and I got offered two. And one of them happened to be in HR and I could walk to it. Well, I could drive, but I didn't have a car at that point. So I went to this HR job and do you know what? I really took to it. And because of my background in sport, I didn't really think I was working that hard. I got there at 9 o'clock. I was told to leave at five. And I just thought, no, but there's still work to be done. So that genuinely is how I entered into the world of HR. The training, the development, recruitment was the first sort of areas I got involved in. There was something in my former life around training, coaching that actually sort of worked in synergy with HR. And from there on in, it just went from there. They sent me, the first company I worked for sent me to college. So I did all of my certificate in personnel practice and my degree, my CIPD. And from there on in, I got my first manager's job and spent 15 years working for a consultancy business after that. And they eventually appointed me as a director. Can talk about that and what happened. But when I left that company, and I'll always be grateful to that company, always, because I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now without that. I chose to set up Nucleus HR. I wanted to do things slightly differently. And have loved it ever since. And 7 years in September that I've been doing that.
Oh, fantastic. Really good. So, Tony, one of the things I want to touch on then today, you just briefly mentioned that there when you were made a director. And in my experience, you know, people really want to climb up the ladder. They want to become a director, but they don't understand what that means and what their legal obligations are. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I work with hundreds of different businesses across the space of a year. And you're absolutely right. When I was made a director for the very first time, it was something I had aspired to do. It was always something I started as a filing clerk, sort of, when you're training, you do anything, So having that aspiration to be a director, and then one day, sort of 20 years later, you get made a director and you sit there and you go, yep, I made it. Celebration, champagne, and all the things that go with it. And then you go, now what? Because
What
no
does
one ever
this
trained you
mean?
in that. Yeah, what does it mean? No one ever trained you in that. You don't really understand what your legal obligations are. It's not until later on where you go in, well, you need to sign off these accounts, or you need to go off and, you're responsible for this particular aspect of the business. And nobody says, actually, you need to go on to a director's training course. Certainly not in small businesses. They might do in larger businesses, but because of the cost of the training that goes with directorial responsibility training, I think roughly there's probably only a couple of providers in the market that's credible, and it's £10,000 to be trained. It makes it cost prohibitive for smaller businesses. So when you're made a director, nobody can really train you on what that means. And that's where I think we fall down a little bit. So knowing that actually you do have some financial responsibility for the business, even if you're not the finance director, you do have some regulatory responsibilities, even though you're not a HR director or you're not the health and safety director. There are so many things that you have to familiarize yourself with and keep abreast of within the business. Otherwise, you personally can be held responsible financially and, legally. I don't think people understand the pressures that come with that.
I'd say absolutely not, Tony, and because you talked about there about the costs and how people don't see the value in it. But actually, when you look at what this training costs, you just think, wow, that should keep out of jail card, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. I mean, £10,000 sounds a big hit to a small business, and it is, because they don't have a training budget. A lot of small businesses don't have a training budget, sadly, but this is the reality we live in. And they don't really find, can, they're not able to find the money in the budget to be able to get £10,000 to release to one person's training. But like you say, if they don't, when that person ends up being responsible for something that technically causes a fine or a custodial sentence, because let's all be honest, the worst case scenario in all of this is we can end up in jail.
And you mentioned that personal responsibility, and it's great, say director of, and I must admit I'm a director of a few companies. But I don't think people realize that it is a personal, individual responsibility. And that, I think, if maybe if people knew that, fewer people would be quick to sort of sign on the dotted line, really.
Absolutely. I'm now in a position where I have choices. At the beginning of your career, you don't really feel like you've got those choices when you're climbing the ladder. Now, I've been offered directorships with businesses that I've actually declined because I know I'm either not the right person for them, I haven't got the knowledge that they need, and I've not got the time to go and acquire it, or, perhaps they're not run in the way that is consistent with my values or the legal obligations that I know I'd have. So I have actually turned down directorships because of the fact that I'm not prepared to put myself on the line for someone else's perhaps actions.
I'm same. I've done a similar thing in the past. And you do have to think about it. But I think it's for most people, it's the experience that puts them in the position to think, oh, I ought to think about this. But that's pretty much after the horse has bolted, isn't
It is really. It's
it?
normally, yeah, like you say, it comes with experience to know which bits you go, oh, perhaps that looks a little bit too much for me. I'm not where they need me to be, or they're not where I need them to be. That comes later on in life, I felt. Definitely.
It's really interesting. I was having a conversation last week with somebody, and we were talking about confidence, and we were talking about confidence with incompetence. and confident with competence. And I find that from a lot of directors, they have the confidence to become directors, but are incompetent when it becomes their responsibilities. And there's no real, you're in a company and you're working and you see people behaving badly and not as directors should be. Where do you raise it? So they actually get away with it, in my opinion. So, is there a method? Is there a channel? If you're working with somebody, you think actually there's malpractice going on here. Who do you raise it with?
Yeah, exactly. And if they're a director, normally you go to the managing director. Okay, so that is where you'd go. If it's the managing director, then it becomes a slightly different issue. And it depends who that managing director is responsible to. So if it's the shareholders, or if there is a shareholding board, if you like, you'd go to those. But if the owner of the business is also the main shareholder or the shareholder of the business, and the MD, and they are behaving in a way that compromises you or the other directors, then that's a slightly different issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a
Taking that,
difficult one.
yeah, it is a difficult one, but is it, are they doing something that is illegal? Are they doing something that you need to report under the Companies Act? Are they doing something that you need to whistleblow through health and safety? So the HSE, it depends on what it is to where you end up going with it. But ultimately, you have got choices and you have got options. It's difficult. And like you say, I've worked in a business as a consultant, not as a director, where I've genuinely felt the health and safety approach by the MD was actually negligent and weren't following HSE guidelines to the point where somebody was compromised and somebody was very seriously injured. Even in my sort of capacity as a consultant, felt, well, I think I've got some obligations here. So you can imagine what the board of directors must have felt, because it was the MD that led that culture.
But even, even in that, you are, whatever your directorial position is in the business, if you observe, see, hear, whatever, whether it's comfortable or not, you have a legal responsibility to actually do something about it, even if you feel you're going to get kicked back. But that is your legal responsibility.
Absolutely, it is. And when you look at something as simple as you're responsible for everything you do say and everything you don't say.
Okay.
So by keeping quiet, you're still responsible for it.
Yeah.
And that's the bit I don't think people fully understand.
Yeah.
They are ultimately fully responsible for the not just the performance of the business, the operational performance. They're responsible for all of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really difficult. Just because you've got a finance director doesn't mean to say that they share, they shoulder all of the burden that goes with the finances. That's not true, and that's a simple common misunderstanding that people have. When I first became a director, I had no idea. I didn't know how to look at a set of accounts. That all had to be trained to me. I was like, that's why you're here as accountants. But that's not
And again,
technically.
you hear that, don't you? When like you say, the managing director or CEO's signing off the annual accounts, and they just sign them because they've been presented to them without fully understanding what it is they're actually signing. And I think you see a lot of that when hands change within a company as well. So when the leadership changes and there's just an acceptance, well, that everything's right, and who's there to do the due diligence? It's not always picked up, is it?
No, absolutely it isn't. And I think that's the scary bit in all of this, and I guess, as an employee, as a professional employee, you are always sort of thinking, you try and think of the best interests of the business, don't you? Of course you
Absolutely.
do. As a professional growing their career, you do tend to put the business first, but sometimes you think, well, that's not in my best interest. And as an employee, you are allowed to do that. You are permitted to do that. Technically, as a director, you're not. It should be in the best interest of the company and your personal aspirations or your personal reward, if you like, is all but irrelevant. It's being the
Yeah.
best. I know that sounds a little bit, throwaway, but it is. It's, that conflict of interest that you're managing daily is something that perhaps isn't as prevalent as it should be in businesses.
I think that's a point that very few people understand. When I reflect back on my God knows how many years of working and working in different organizations at different levels, you see directors running some of the businesses as though it is their personal cash cow. Do you know what I mean? And some of the decisions that they make and some of the things that they do is that it doesn't fall in line with what you said. It falls in line with, their personal interest comes first over the business.
And that's technically, again, something that falls outside of the Companies Act and what your responsibilities are as a director. But if nobody sits and explains these things to you, how do you ever know? And it's not something that you get taught easily.
No, it isn't. And I think there's twofold there, isn't it? Because no, you don't get taught it. And obviously, I come from a startup world. So you see really bad behavior often in the startup world because obviously, if somebody's innovative, they have an idea and they go into business. So they don't know what their director responsibilities are. And you see some shocking behaviors. But equally, then, even when they take in money from investors, et cetera, and you're then surrounded with a board, I'm not even so sure that these expert non-executive directors then that come into your business have the knowledge and capability and wherewithal to really understand the governance and how they're leading the CEOs or directors of that business.
Oh, I've absolutely seen that happen. I've seen that happen with clients, former clients, and it's sad to see that because, in some cases, these people are being paid an inordinate amount of money. But what are they adding to it?
It's like a tick in the box exercise, isn't it? We need one of these, so tick, we've got one, without fully understanding. And Sandra, when you were even talking about the bad behavior there, I mean, I've seen startups take money from VCs and literally treat it like it's their own bank account, and think that things are now amazing and they go out and buy all sorts of stuff, and you just think, whoa, that money's for the company, not for you to have a good time, which you won't be having a good time for a long time. How do we stop those behaviors? And sometimes, Tony, with lower down the ranks, see these things happening. And again, I think it's like, where do you raise the awareness? So if it's the founder of a business, the CEO of a business, you can hardly knock on his door and say, by the way, I don't like what you're doing here. So again, is it the company's house act that you'd report these things to them?
Yeah, you can do. I mean, to be honest, I know you say, you can't go to, or it's difficult to go to the owner or the founder or whatever. But actually, I think you should try. And I know that sounds difficult because actually that education piece goes up as well as down. So actually, I would encourage somebody to go, look, I personally, when I find this kind of conflict that somebody's in or that compromising position, and they've spoken to me about it because I do work in a world of HR, so I am like, I'm going to call it a priest, but I might ask you to edit that later. It's like everyone can speak to me in confidence, and they can, and I sort of help them to understand, how they might make it a little, and I coach them in, okay, so this is the behavior you're seeing. Do you feel you can go and speak to the individual? Let's role play. Let's talk how you might go and play that back to the owner or the founder or the MD or whatever they've called themselves. And how do you think? Because to be honest, most MDs and CEOs might not even understand what they're doing is wrong until somebody tells them. And eventually they're not going to turn around, or they might not turn around and go, huh, I didn't realize that. I might change my behavior. They might not. They might push back initially. Just from my own experience, they might push back initially. But then in a few days or a couple of weeks, when the seed's sown, they come back and go, I've been thinking about what you said, or you start to see slight changes in behavior. Now that's good examples, and hopefully that does work. I am not naive. I do know that doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't always work. And I would say from experiences I've had, and you approach it the best way you can. You have conversations, and with your HR or with whoever you speak to, and you think, okay, I'm going to approach this, and the CEO in the case in mind, just took umbrage, and anybody that had that forward thinking to say, let's sit down and talk about this is something I've observed, I'm concerned about it for the business, then that person just gets rid of those people because all they want around them is yes people.
Absolutely. I've seen that. I'm with you. That does happen. In fact, sadly, I've seen it probably more times than I should. And as HR, I'm often helped to remove, to help remove those kind of people. The space that I sit in at the moment is very much employee relations driven. So it is about employment law. It is about people perhaps not fitting with the company, hopefully not for the reasons you've mentioned. Not
That's
always.
usually one of the excuses that
Yeah, but it can be, yeah. They're just, culturally, they don't fit anymore.
Yes.
Questioned you. Like you say, if that is the case and they genuinely do feel that they're compromised, you're right. There are bodies that you can go and speak to, depending on what that is, whether they have to raise it with a higher body, whether it's a, again, I talk about the HSE, I talk about, whether it is Companies House, whether it is, a legal issue, then there are authorities that they can speak to say, I think this is an issue and it compromises British, the Companies Act or whatever
So
it.
you mentioned something there that actually takes us on to a point that I wanted to talk about. And you said that as an HR person, employee law is what you're focused on in that area of supporting the business. So where who is responsible? So HR, when I was growing up, okay. When I was growing up, I
Quite
used to think,
grown up, Sandra, when you said when you
well,
were growing up.
when I was growing up, I'm still growing up, and you know me too well, Leanne. I promise never to grow up. So, I used to think that HR was there for the employee.
Yeah.
Yes, looking back now on my experience, let me ask you the question, who is HR there for?
Okay. Depends on the business, but typically to think that HR is there, and I'm going to put myself out there, and a lot of HR people are going to fundamentally disagree, and I hope that you get some reaction to this comment. I know I'm going to be controversial, but I will sit there and say, actually, most HR people are there to represent the business. Now, it is a balance of representing the business's best interests with the individual's best, the employee's best interests. Sometimes, and most of the time you'd like to think that actually they coincide, they work together and they gel together. The two things work hand in hand. That's not always the case.
No.
And then when
That's
it comes down to it, HR are there to support the needs of the business.
yeah.
It is. And anyone who says not, I question it. Years ago, when it was a personnel department, that might have been different. And when employment law was perhaps less onerous and less financially restrictive to a business, I think that probably was it. But now, when we're talking about unlimited awards, when we're talking about, 92,000 for an unfair dismissal claim, and actually, this week, I don't want to go politics, but this week we're likely to see a change in government, and whichever one we have, all of them are looking to reduce employment qualification to zero. So the 2 year remove, all of them but Conservative are doing that, so or have pledged to do that. In that case, employers have got a huge financial responsibility that comes with this. So that's why HR, I think, has moved from the personnel to HR. It's had to become more business focused.
Okay,
And I'd
that's
agree with you there, Tony, from my experience in business as well, because ultimately you are that protection to the company. So it's legally representing them at all times, isn't it, to make sure that there is no claim comeback, etc. And sometimes, that can be harsh. To be seen like that. And I think the larger the companies get, then they tend to then start using like people partners and things like that, where it is more about the people, but that's in much larger organizations. Also, though, when we're talking about, who looks after the company, even in, from a HR perspective, I mean, again, smaller companies, you see really appalling behavior within the startup world around people. How do they engage with people like yourselves when you're too small to have a HR team internally? What do you do about it, and how do you ensure that whoever you're working with understands you and your business?
Absolutely. And I've seen exactly what you've seen, smaller businesses struggling to get a handle on, how best to interact with their workforce, how best to get, how do you get the best out of your team? How does, one person's actions not prohibit the performance of the business sometimes? And you're right, having a good quality HR person today is going to cost 45, £50,000 a year. And a lot of small businesses can't justify that expenditure. So you're right to outsource, but finding the right partner is the key, because a lot of outsourced professionals will, and they're very good at it, they're excellent at it, they will provide advice, they will provide a level of indemnity, and they will provide, a website with some documents on there for you, and they're very good at it. That isn't bespoke to you, though. That isn't about your culture and how you want to behave. That you need a little bit more personal. I think I said at the beginning, the reason I perhaps moved on from my previous employer, I think personally, I wanted Nucleus HR to be a little bit more involved, have a little bit more presence, a little bit more understanding about the client, the journey, what they wanted to achieve, and what they wanted for their employees. What kind of relationship, what kind of culture they were trying to build, so that it was a much more involved and two-way relationship rather than it being a very transactional service. That's just not what I wanted. There aren't a huge amount of people in the marketplace that do that, but that it's growing, and it's certainly something that employers want. And it is affordable, and it's much, much cheaper than the alternative of hiring somebody full-time, of which you won't get the full benefit of, because you don't need them for 40 hours a week, or so.
Yeah, it's that call upon service, isn't it? When you do need it, and also I think from my experience in running businesses, it's having somebody that can talk you through the possibilities as well, because there's never one answer, is there? And I think by having the out of a box type HR, then it is like this is the answer, and generally it's like this is how you play it down the middle to the law, which isn't always suitable to you as a company or as the client. So obviously, services like yourself, I'm imagining, would then open that up and give you a lot more options.
Absolutely. And I think sort of that's just how I was always trained to do it. I was very lucky that I had training from, so I'm an employment law advocate anyway, so I had that training. But my very first role, I worked with somebody who I've not seen for many, many years, but she was brilliant. And she had a master's in employment law. She was excellent. It's where I got my passion from. But she taught me how to give advice. And the advice that I always gave and always give is, there is option one. This is how you comply with the law. This is the risks if you don't do that. This is if we go to tribunal, this is the chance of winning, losing, and this is how much it might cost you. Your business can, the chances of winning in that scenario are quite high, but if you didn't, it would cost this. Option B is where we perhaps sort of position it slightly differently, and we sort of look at a bit of more of a middle of the road approach. And you then go, well, actually, if this happens and we do get taken to a tribunal, or the risks are a bit higher, this is how much it might cost you. And then there's a third option. And that third option, I always describe it as like driving your car off a cliff. We help you deploy the airbags, and we help you try and stay safe, but ultimately, you have to accept that you're driving your car off a cliff. So it will kind of explode. But this is what it will cost you if you do that. And sometimes, as much as this is, around best practice, sometimes a business might need to protect their organization and take option C. But it's their choice of what they tend to do. But they should make that choice based on having a full understanding of what the consequences of each route is. Is that Makes sense. That's how I
Yeah.
could advise.
No, absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. And you know, I mean, and I'm interested then when you give clients the these advice of have you had clients that have gone completely against anything that you've ever advised them?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the nature of people. That's the nature of being involved. That's what makes my life fun. You know, if I took it all personally, I'd be sort of shaking in a corner. That's just not how it is. You know, people will look at it and, you know, sort of MDs, you know, who have spent years and years, they're so passionately, so involved, so personally invested into these things that sometimes they go, no, I know best. And I'll always support, you know, when you've got an MD next to you or an owner of a business and you're going, right, this is what I think behind the doors, this is what I think, this is where you're compromising yourself. In front of anyone else, when we open that door, I will stand with them and I will protect them as best I can. But ultimately, behind that door, I will be saying to somebody, you realize where we're at with this, right? You realize that this could be a problem. But yeah, I have absolutely had directors, managers, shareholders, you know, all go, nah, I'm going to do it a slightly different way.
That's
That's it.
like point four then, isn't it? That's driving the car off the cliff with no
Yeah,
airbags.
I'm deploying airbag. I'm all out. But it's up to them, isn't it? I can't tell somebody to do it. Everyone's got their choices and they can make their own
Absolutely.
choices. They have got to justify it to somebody at some point. And it could be a judge, it could be the shareholders, it could be anybody. But at some point, they could have to justify it. Be sure we can.
It's quite interesting listening to this because you know the three of us obviously. So you're focused on the HR. Leanne is focused on mentoring and helping them to run their business over there. And I can see I've always been passionate about people's behavior. And a lot of the work that I do in the leadership, it's more about how you behave, recognizing your own behavior and recognizing where it's taking you. So that is quite an interesting combination. And the fact that with smaller businesses, they do need somebody, showing them themselves, holding the mirror up to them, whether it's the choices that they're making in terms of, the business choices or the individual personal leadership choices. So that was really good to hear that. I've got the other half of that coin for you though here in this question. And so fine, we established that HR is there to support, protect, advise the organization, be it big, small, whatever size. So welfare, the welfare of employees, where who holds that bag?
See, that's the trick, isn't it? Because it's a balance. Now, the reality is when push comes to shove, HR will support the business as much as, you know, they can. They do try and help, and we should help with the welfare of every staff member. We do. The reality is, though, when push comes to shove, realistically, depending on the situation, we either have somebody within the business that's specially appointed for that. In a bigger business, you might have a training development coaching arm. That might be where they go with it. In bigger businesses, they might outsource that to a counsellor, depending on, you know, wherever this is, there is normally some route where we go. You know, I'm not going to break confidence here, I'm sure, but, you know, there's times where I will pull someone like Leanne in. In fact, you know, more recently, it will be Leanne, who can actually sit and coach the individual through what some of the things that they might be struggling with. You know, you again, we talk about outsourcing because I do think it's a really good tool for people to use because they don't need a Leanne 100% of the time. But actually, it's quite nice to bring somebody in and go, actually, this person's particularly struggling. It compromises me slightly because I'm going to be taking it this route, but actually, they do need a hand and it's not me.
And it works both ways, the work that I do as well, because sometimes I'm engaged directly by the member of staff, and sometimes I'm like by the company, employed by the company to work with a member of staff. And then, you know, that comes two ways. So it's like, well, what's the company trying to get out of this? What is the end result that they want as well? So then the two do marry together. And I think working closely then with the HR advisor, you're doing things to push a situation into a particular direction as well, really to the benefit of both parties. And I think in my experience, in most cases, Tony, and I don't know if it's the same for you, generally when there is an issue with an employee at work, or, you know, the relationship isn't right, it's never not just right on one side. It's just not right. And it's not right for both parties. But we get stuck in a rut and we just don't seem to know how to get out of our own rut, really.
Yeah, absolutely it is. That's exactly how I see it. It is. Both parties have definitely, you know, walked themselves down a path that they can't seem to get out of. And they can't make that U-turn to go, well, how do I put this right without some kind of intervention? Because I'm outsourced, sometimes I can do that. Sometimes it actually perhaps isn't best to be me, and it's perhaps best to be somebody like Leanne or like yourself, Sandra, that actually we bring somebody in who can definitely help with this area. Do you feel that the welfare of individuals in some respects, you know, sort of when I first started, it was the 90s, mid 90s I first started. And I think to myself, you know, it was very much about, there was a much more welfare-y organisation that I was, whether it was the organisation or whether that was the times, you know, being a little bit young and naive at that point, I felt as though it was perhaps a little bit more employee orientated. Where we are today is perhaps a little bit, there's a bit more of a commercial edge to it. And I think, although I have started to see in the past few years, post-COVID, a slight shift in behaviours of the company wanting to do the right thing. I think we've had a gap for probably 20, 30 years, though, in between that, where perhaps we lost ourselves a little bit.
I would say that. I don't know whether it was the advancement of technology and things went so quickly, but it was all the, started work probably before you, but it was all the soft skills that you were given and as you were going up through your career. And it was all those that seemed to have stopped, wasn't it? And it's like, now we just get on with it because the computer tells us, or, you know, we can go on an e-learning course, or, and we did just seem to have this mass void. And I think that element of soft skills is coming back. And I think as people understand, it's your people that are driving your company forward. Nothing else. The technology enables it. Process make it repeatable. But it's the people in your business that are driving the car. Therefore, treat them in the right way.
Yeah, actually, otherwise we do have this car going off a cliff. It's just that you're not driving it anymore. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, Tony, we're about to wrap up. So I've got one last question for you. I mean, what gives you the passion to keep on doing what you're doing? What do you love about it the most?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I speak about this a lot in terms of the fact that I come to work every day and I don't think it's a job. I love what I do. I have a real passion to help employers navigate their way through the tricky situations of what can be people. And as much as we all adore people in our different disciplines, and we do, actually, you know, helping employers remove the headache that can be caused by people is something I am so passionate about that I don't see it as work. I don't see it as a job. I go to work every day and I genuinely feel like I make a difference to how business navigates the journey, sometimes that tricky journey with their teams. And I love that. And I can't ever see a time that I won't be doing that.
Fantastic. And I bet no one day is going to be the same in that, is it? Because it involves people and we're all different as people who all have different values. So every single day is going to be different, isn't it?
Broad spectrum of HR. Yes, I know that I talk about the fact that most of my responsibilities seem to sit around employee relations, employment law, and it touches all around that. But today I was training. Tomorrow I'll be, actually, I am doing a disciplinary tomorrow. I'm doing a careers thing on Wednesday. I'm doing a training thing on Thursday. On Friday, I'm looking at employee benefits for people and how that best can be, you know, a budget can be best used every day. Because of the broad spectrum that is people, I do something different every single day, and I love it because every single employer that I work with is different. So I feel like I'm the luckiest girl in the world.
So my last point then, Tony, I mean, we've touched on directorship, we've touched on HR, we've touched on, employee welfare. How would, so if to sort of, I'm trying to, and I know it may not be easy. How, so we talked about at the beginning, leading or conscious directorship. How, if you had one thing that you would share with, a business leader, whether they're in a CEO, MD, director, in terms of how they would manage around the areas of HR and employees and that sort of stuff, what would that be?
You know what? I actually think we make it way more complicated than what it should be. Actually, if you treat people in the main, if you treat people how you want to be treated yourself, or how you wanted your mum to be treated, or how you want your child to be treated, you aren't going to go that far wrong. Don't get me wrong, there are quirks in law where you go, well, that makes no sense whatsoever. That will absolutely always be there. But I do think that we make it way more complicated. And I think that if people use a little bit of common sense, and I appreciate it's not that common, but I actually do think if if your instincts and your gut, if you like, is telling you this isn't right, it normally isn't. Pick up the phone to somebody and go and take some advice. Lots of people are out there to help you. Nobody wants you to fail. Pick up the phone, get some advice. That's what I would.
Awesome. I love that. Thank you, Tony. That was
Oh,
very,
thank you. It's
very
been great to have
informative.
you joining us on the sofa today. So thank you, Tony Robinson from Nucleus HR.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great talking to you, ladies. You always make me feel sort of this high. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's been a
It's
pleasure.
part of our mantra, isn't it, to elevate, reward, and
Absolutely.
inspire other female leaders.
Absolutely.